afternoon. Thanks for coming back and listening so soon. Bring in the stories of everyday folks while you sit back, relax, have a whisper, coach. Here we go with the Trend Speak podcast, bringing you insight or bringing a laugh. Here's the man who might have a plan. Give it up for your host, Trent Podskaland.
Well, last Friday night, I went curling. Yes, you heard that correctly. And I know I don't mean curling like weightlifting or curling the bruise. I mean curling, the Olympic sport that you see played on long sheets of ice. And I'll tell you what, those sheets of ice are much longer in person than they appear on TV, in my opinion. And it wasn't as wide as I thought it would be. But most definitely, it was very long. I figured, why not this week share a little bit about that experience and educate you a little bit more on the game of curling. You see, I've been reading this book titled Bare Bones Stones, A Welcome Guide to Curling by Joel Ingersoll. And Joel is a curler who plays at the, well, at least at the writing of this book, which I believe was 2018, maybe, somewhere around there. Joel? Well, whatever his name is, irrelevant, I suppose. Actually, it's not irrelevant because he's the author of this book. Now I have to look it up. Joel. So, Joel does a very good job at educating you in this book. I actually really enjoy this book a lot. And I've always been very interested in the sport of curling. I've always been very intrigued. A lot of strategy comes into play when you are curling. And my mom and I, we used to always play this game called Stratego. Why? Oh, I just got a text from my wife. And I was wondering why she was texting me while I'm recording this podcast. Anyway, we used to always play this board game called Stratego. I've always enjoyed chess, checkers, you know, games that take a little bit of strategy. And so I knew that curling would be something that I am very interested in. Did you know, because I've learned so much through this book, did you know that curling is actually nicknamed the, quote, roaring game? Because of the noise that the rock or the stone makes as it's going down the ice. Because if you did not know, the ice is not smooth. There's actually a pebble, little pebbles that are on the ice. Essentially, it's frozen water droplets. You see, our instructor was telling us that every morning he walks down the sheet of ice with a backpack on, and this hose, which sprays up into the air, falls onto the ice, the water droplets freeze, and it's supposed to simulate essentially rain droplets hitting the ice. And this helps with friction so that the stone doesn't just fly 15 feet down the ice before it would do anything. This helps in terms of the curling aspect, everything like that. Of course, there are other things that go into it, but that's a start. Well, when you're sweeping, that reduces the friction and it warms the ice up, melts the ice just enough for that rock to continue to slide down the ice or in the intended direction. And of course, you want to sweep as close to that rock as possible, because let's say you're sweeping a foot in front of the rock. Well, by the time you've swept, and the time that that rock were to hit that spot that you had been sweeping, that water that you had just melted a little bit would actually be refrozen already by the time the rock hit it. And so you want to make sure you're as close to the rock as possible. Curling is actually, according to this book, often compared to like a bocce ball, shuffleboard, or chess on ice. And you'll usually see essentially like a almost like a dartboard on the ice in a way. You have the center, which is called the button. And then you have the 4, the 8, and the 12. And these are 4-foot, 8-foot, and 12-foot rings. So you'll have the button in the middle, which is white. And then you'll have a red circle. That's the 4-foot. A white circle is the 8-foot. And then you have another larger red circle, which is the 12-foot. And there's 4 positions. So you have your lead, which throws first. Typically, you have 4 people on a team. Sometimes you'll see on the Olympics, there are doubles. So it's just 2 people. And then you'll see teams of 4 as well. And I think most people are familiar with the teams of 4. So you have 4 positions. You have a lead who throws first. You have a second who, as you guessed it, throws second. Third, who rightfully so would throw third. They're also your vice skip. And then you have your skip, who is last, who essentially is the one at the other end of the ice, helping to guide those decisions of where the rocks should be played and things of that nature. That skip position, I had an experience with it in this intro to curling class that I took on Friday. Man, there is already, just to throw the stone down the ice, there's a lot to think about in terms of form, momentum, how fast you should be coming out of the hack, which is like a runner starting block, essentially. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to think about. Aiming, like where to aim particularly, the rotation of the rock, a lot to think about. And then you add on the fact that someone needs to be a skip. And so I was practicing that position first. And that's where you are staying at the other end of the ice from where people are throwing. And so you are the one deciding, okay, they need to aim here to the right, but I actually want, so like I might go to the far right of the house is what it's called. You know, that bullseye I was talking about, that whole dartboard looking thing. It's called the house. So I might go to the right side of the house and stick my arm out one direction because really I want the rock to end up in the middle. So because you have to remember the rock is going to curl. And that takes me into, did you know there are different types of shots? So you have a guard that you can throw. And there's the free guard zone. So the free guard zone, essentially a guard is going to be at the top of the house. So it's not touching the red circle at all. It's going to stop before that. Now there's a thick line on the ice called the hog line. And the stone has to be released before that hog line. Otherwise it's a violation. And it has to travel and make it over the other hog line, the other thick line, on the other end of the ice in order to be considered in play. Now, if it makes it over that hog line but doesn't make it all the way to the house, so not even to that, it's not even touching the red for the 12-foot circle, then it becomes a guard. Now, there is the free guard zone, and so within the first 5 rocks, I believe, you cannot hit. I think it's not into the 5th rock that you can hit a guard that's in the free guard zone. And so you also have, there's a lot of other ones, but essentially guards are a big one that you'll hear. And then draws as well. So draw is essentially just like it sounds, you're drawing right around another stone, another rock, to get behind it. Essentially, so it's like curving around that stone. So it would curve around that guard, and you're throwing that guard so that it's protecting your own rocks and making sure that you are getting the points, hopefully. I learned a lot from from this book that I've been reading. And it's been very interesting. I'm not even finished with the book yet, but I think I have about 30-ish pages left. I'm sure it's just under that once you take into account like the index and everything like that at the end of the book. But it's been very interesting to learn about. And one of the things I learned actually is that this isn't just any normal old granite. No, this is granite that comes particularly from Scotland. A couple things that I found really interesting within this book. And so I'd like to share a couple of these things that I have highlighted here on my Kindle, if I can find the right one. I thought this was really interesting. This was from the introduction. It said, quote, from its modern debut at the 1998 Nagano Olympics to a dedicated cable channel at Sochi in 2014, curling has become one of the most popular sports and most talked about Winter Olympic sports. On the first Monday during the Winter Olympics in Sochi, so remember this is back in 2014, more than 5 million Americans tuned in to watch curling. That number is particularly impressive when you realize the United States Curling Association didn't hit 20,000 members until 2016. Speaking about demand, and it makes me wonder what those numbers would look like today even. Speaking about demand, so for example, this was just an intro to curling class that I took on Friday night. And then there's a beginner's league. So essentially there will be three of us on one team, three of us on the other team, and our fourth will actually be an instructor on each team to help continue to coach and to develop you so that then you can go into a different or a more advanced league after that. You would graduate then from the beginner's league. Something interesting about sweeping, I was talking to you about that earlier. This says that, quote, elite level sweepers can carry a stone a good 8 to 10 feet further than it otherwise might travel. It's called the, just like I told you earlier, it's called the Roaring Game because of the sound that the granite makes sliding across those bumps that are on the ice. I've highlighted a lot more in this book than I thought I did. I thought this was really funny. It said, quote, in order of magnitude, players blame the ice, then the sweepers, and then the line call, or all three, but unsurprisingly, not themselves, end quote. Thought that was kind of humorous that there is a series in order of magnitude, like it said, that people like to blame things. They'll just never blame themselves on a bad rock being thrown. Though, if you do listen to the Olympics, of course, they will be like, oh, yeah, that was my bad, or oh, sorry. And it really is a huge, huge team sport. One thing to note as well is there aren't officials within the sport. So it's all on integrity, player honesty, and that is one big difference about curling is that really it's players being honest. If you touch the rock while it's moving when you're sweeping, if you touch the rock, then you'd say, oh, sorry, I touched the rock, and you just remove it. One thing that, you know, in this book that Joel points out is that a lot of times in the even in the official rule book, it says it comes up to the skips to make that decision. So even amongst the rule book, a lot of times it's just the skips talking to each other and coming to an agreement. And they had even said in there, you know, like when they are talking to an official, typically they'll be like, well, what do you guys think? And flip it right back around on the skips. And so it is their job to figure things out. Now in the Olympics, of course, they can afford this technology where there's a green light. So when your hand touches the handle, the flesh on that handle will trigger a green light. And there is a magnetic strip underneath the hog line. And so if it detects something on that handle, when it goes over the hog line, the lights will turn red. And so that's how a lot of times they are determining hog line violations within the Olympics. There were even a couple instances this past year. Of course, it is technology, so it can malfunction. There were a couple instances this past year where I had seen watching the Olympics that they'd be like, hey, just to the official, just so you know, this light is on. And so the official would come over and stand at the hog line just to make sure that they released when they were supposed to. So yes, it does malfunction from time to time, but as you can imagine, the Olympics versus your everyday curling club are two very, very different things, even when it comes to scoring. You know, they have the electronic scoreboard on the Olympics. That is not at all how it works within an actual curling club. Even our instructor had said the way they have it in their curling club, that's every curling club typically. The Olympics is very much an exception where, based on the way they're keeping the score, everything is obviously done manually versus digitally. And of course, that comes down to cost and a variety of other factors. I thought this was really interesting talking about how they make the curling ice. And I do need to take a quick break, but I plan on getting back into this podcast here shortly. And we'll continue this conversation soon. Now, of course, they're not doing this every single time that they're making sheets of ice. They're not doing this every single time to melt a sheet of ice and redo it. But in the first place, essentially, the process is a pretty lengthy process to make a sheet of ice. You see, they have to fill it about an inch, fill the sheet about an inch with water, wait for that to freeze, then you fill it again. You have to keep in mind that they're also at some point, well, let me just try and summarize here on this page for you. Essentially, they're walking around with a hose to fill about an inch of water, and then they wait for that to freeze. Now, they say that if you flood this again before that first layer is completely frozen, then you're going to get veins streaking all over the sheet because the lower layers of the ice are going to crack. So you need to do that for 2 days straight where you're building up a base layer of ice. Then, though it seems counterintuitive, they say within this book, you actually have to shave the ice that you're trying to create. Because it's not just going to magically come out perfectly level. Wouldn't that be nice? No, so essentially shaving the ice is making sure that you get any of those peaks and valleys out of the ice specifically. After that, you're going to flood several more times. Of course, in little increments again. And then that's when you're painting the ice white, typically. Because you don't want to be able to see any pipes or other materials below the ice that are maybe there. And it can appear, in that case, like a pea ice rather than a normal ice. And of course, you have to make sure that your hoses are not laying across any of these sheets of ice, because any amount of heat is then going to melt the ice, again, creating yet another divot. You want to make sure that you're always being mindful of that. Even when you're playing curling, that your knee isn't on the ground for too long, or that you, maybe if you fall, that you don't stay on the ground for too long, because it could take even just as small as 30 seconds to create a little divot from your body heat. Again, things that you maybe wouldn't normally think about. They also will put the rings and any lines or designs on the ice and then yet put another layer of ice on top of that. What it all really boiled down to, because then you flood the ice again to seal everything, really what it all boiled down to was, as he put it, one general rule of ice making, which is, quote, never stop flooding. And then you also have to make sure that you're putting the rocks on the ice to make sure that those are maintaining a proper temperature, because you don't want moderately warm granite, as he writes, on the ice. And there's actually four types of curling ice. Championship ice is what you're going to see at the Olympics, of course. You also have arena ice, which is like hockey ice. Not ideal at all. Nor is outdoor ice. And then your last one is dedicated. So that would be like your, what he said most people play on. And that would be like your curling clubs, basically, are going to be dedicated, which makes sense. It's a dedicated curling ice in that case. So there are just a couple last minute points I want to touch on. One of them, throwing a stone. I thought this was really interesting. There's the ABCs of curling. He talks about alignment, balance, and curl is essentially what that boils down to. And so I'm just looking at two things here. I know I mentioned this a little bit earlier, but yes, curling stones are not made of just any old granite. Actually, there is one place in the world that the granite is quarried from, and that's off an island off the coast of Scotland. And it's actually this island is the last remaining plug from an extinct volcano. So it's granite contains low amounts of quartz, which actually makes the rock tighter. This composition, as he says, prevents moisture from getting inside the rock where it can freeze and expand. And so, of course, any process of freezing and expanding could, and of course this would happen in a curling stone if it was made of normal granite, could then degrade or chip the rock, the stone, whatever you want to say, or it could also break. And of course, breaking a stone doesn't happen very often. It is rare that that would happen. However, it could happen. Never say never. The one last thing I want to touch on was, well, one of the last things I want to touch on is this controversy of Broomgate. And this happened in 2015. This swept through the curling world, no pun intended. So it actually had come because of a particular broom that was invented called the ice pad. And so there wasn't really anything super spectacular about the company that was trying to make it. However, oops, clicked the wrong thing here on my Kindle. However, there was, so there was some controversy in terms of sweeping technique. Of course, there was no, like, there was no way, how do I want to sum this up, basically? Read the book, I guess, is the first thing. But there were a number of arguments about the, like, certain fabrics and inserts inside the pad that actually scratched the ice. And so that's really where the controversy came in, was the way that the broom was designed. It more so scratched the ice rather than just melting the pebble, causing the rocks to move in an unexpected way. And so there were a number of arguments that had come out. One of the big arguments that had come out was that this, what, quote unquote, the point of making sure, right? So that it should not be based on the broom helping to make the shot, but it should be sort more so on the shooter. And so he compared it to, let's say you had like a baseball bat that had a homing device in it that reduced strikeouts and increased contact. That is exactly what he says in this book. And so really what it boiled down to in summary from anytime I'm struggling, trying to paraphrase as best I can, what it really boiled down to was this type of broom would have set the precedent and led the way to create other brooms where it would technologically advance. So maybe just throwing out two random countries, let's just use the United States and Jamaica in the Olympics. So the United States could afford a very nice technological broom if one existed. Jamaica, in all reality, would not be able to afford the same type of equipment that the United States would. And so that's what it boiled down to, was really a fairness thing in terms of equipment, as well as something that wasn't going to damage the ice by scratching it and changing the playing surface, which would then also affect the way the other team threw, the way other teams on that sheet later threw. And so it actually, there was a broom summit hosted by the Canadian government that got together scientists and curlers to recommend appropriate technology changes. And ultimately, this is why you see different colored broomsticks, but everyone has the same colored fabric, which is a standardized mustard yellow Oxford 420D fabric for the broom pads. And scientists even went as far to try out different fabrics in a variety of configurations to see what the impact on the surface of the ice would be. They went as far as even testing out different colored broom pads to see if that had an effect, though the results were inconclusive on that. They still only recommended one color, just so everyone was still, it was very obvious that you then have the recommended fabric on your broom. So really you can still use whatever broom you'd like to throw with in terms of stabilization, but in terms of sweeping, there's only one standardized fabric that you are allowed to use within the game. As I wrap up here, I just wanted to really educate you a little bit more about curling. I'll tell you what, though, it is a lot to think about. It is quite a workout with sweeping. It is a very big cardio workout. Because of the demand, because of the Olympics, there is a higher demand right now, and so unfortunately for me, I won't be able to get involved in a beginner's league until May. I am signed up. I'm very excited for it. It's just unfortunate that I have to wait 2 months. Hopefully it comes up quickly, though. Of course, my favorite part, besides getting to know people, and what I'm most excited for is meeting new people and learning the game and everything, because I do think it's going to be fun. It's just a learning curve, as it would be with any new sport that you're trying to learn or trying to play, that is. My favorite part afterwards was broom stacking. And so broom stacking is where the winning skip would buy the losing skip a drink. The winning vice skip would buy the losing vice skip a drink. Winning second, losing second, and vice versa. And if you have another round, the other team can buy. And that's my favorite part. It's going to be my favorite part. It's just sitting around drinking afterwards and chit-chatting with people, getting to know them, talking about the game. I have a feeling that's where I'm not only going to learn a lot on the ice, but I think I'm going to learn a lot off the ice as well, talking about the game, talking about different shots that took place. I will definitely provide an update in May. I'll make sure to do a curling 2.0 podcast. the instructor that I had when I was talking to him afterwards, he said that's why they intentionally, there's three sheets of ice at my curling club. And he said that's intentionally why they put tables behind. So imagine you have your sheets of ice and then you have glass windows and then you have a lobby area. And so essentially, quote unquote, behind those sheets of ice in the lobby area is a table. And he said that's why we intentionally put tables there so you can sit at the table, drink with your team and the opposing team, and just chat, get to know each other, talk about the game, things like that. So I hope that you were a little bit educated on curling. If you'd like to learn more, feel free to reach out to me. I love talking about this stuff, and I'm very excited to see where it goes, how it goes. Thank you for listening to me talk about curling this week. Please don't forget to subscribe, rate, review the podcast. And we'll be back next week with a guest or not. It'll be something crazy. Have a great week, folks.